You can check out if you're interested. They would love you to come by at the 2018 Palestinian Holiday Crafts Fair at the Middle East Children's Alliance. More information at meccaforpeace.org or give them a call at 548-0542 in the 510 area code. As always, it's an honor to have you with us, Ziad.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
KABU is proud to co-sponsor the Portland Folk Music Society's concert season. On Friday, November 30th, the PFS concert features Patrick Ball and the Legends of the Celtic Harp in their program titled A Winter Gift. These three famed harpers perform Celtic legends and weave English and Irish literature with rare pieces of holiday music. The concert and storytelling event is at the Reedwood Friends Church, 2901 Southeast Steele in Portland, at 7:30 p.m. On January 18th next year, the Northwest band True North will bring their folk and bluegrass stylings to the PFS stage. For more information, go to the website, kboo.fm, and look on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hi, you're tuned to KABU Portland. I'm Carolyn Campbell, and this is Recovery Zone, a show focused on healing our world. My guests today are here to talk about how walking can be part of that. They work with the nonprofit advocacy group, Oregon Walks, which has a mission to create livable communities by making walking safe, convenient, and attractive. Here in the studio, I am joined by the new executive director of Oregon Walks, Jess Thompson, and also by Ine Levin and Izzy Armenta.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So I want to personally say thank you all for being here. It's such an important topic, and there's a lot there. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to start by having Jess introduce her team and talk a little bit about what Oregon Walks' mission is.
Excellent. So I'm Jess Thompson, the executive director of Oregon Walks, day 11.
Day 11.
And I couldn't be more thrilled to join this committed, dedicated, brilliant group of people who are working so hard to bring walking justice and transportation justice a part of our living landscape here in Portland, Oregon. We have with us today Ina, who has worked with Oregon Walks for about going on 4 years and works very closely with our partner agencies in doing outreach into the community and then also surfacing the voices of people most impacted by the lack of infrastructure in communities and centering those voices in our public policy conversations with government. And then also with us today is Izzy Armenta, who is our transportation justice advocate, who is working hard on the ground, partnering with our agencies and community members who are fighting for safe and convenient walkways in our communities. So I'll let them talk more about what they do.
Thank you. Maybe we should give a brief background of Oregon Walks and where that started from. Ina, would you like to cover that?
Sure. So Oregon Walks has been around for over 2 decades. We started as an all-volunteer-run organization called the Willamette Pedestrian Coalition about five or six years. We hired our first staff. It was Executive Director Steph Routh, and we really kind of came out of our very, very technical focused, looking at, you know, kind of the really nitty gritty of different transportation, different pedestrian-related infrastructure, and really focusing on projects that were going on in the city and countywide and making sure that the infrastructure was there to support pedestrian needs. And then when Steph Routh became the ED of the organization, we broadened our scope to really look at who was most affected by the inequitable infrastructure in our city. and then when Noelle Mickleberry took over as our ED, the one previous to Jess, we really honed in on issues of equity. We really took a very hard look at geographically who was most affected. And we now know that 1 in 3 traffic deaths occur in low-income communities and communities of color. 28 of the 30 most dangerous intersections in Portland are east of 82nd. So over the last 3 years, we've really partnered very closely with place-based community organizations east of 82nd and in the communities that are the most impacted by lack of safe pedestrian infrastructure.
Beautiful. And before we, that's really fabulous to give a nice overview. Before
Thanks,
we continue
Carolyn.
About mm-hmm. the Oregon Walks, I want to have a sense of who's in the room and get a little bit of background about each of you, where you've come from, mm-hmm. what inspired you to be involved in this movement, and anything else you want to share in like a couple of minutes, each of you.
Sure. I guess I could start. So this is probably not a newsflash. Like most folks, I am a transplant. I'm originally from LA. I was born in Mexico, raised in LA, and I've been in Portland going on 5 years now. Mm-hmm. The thing that got me into this work was it's my mom. My mom still lives in LA, and she's transit dependent. So a lot of inspiration that I get is from my mom. When I think of our infrastructure here, I think of other people's family members, how they get around. And then I go back to my mom. How would she get around? Would she be able to get to and from work safely? And so that's where I get a lot of my inspiration. And then just moving to Portland, I was kind of starstruck. I was just like, oh my gosh, I can not own a car. I don't need to own a car. I can bike, I can walk, I can take transit. But then that honeymoon period kind of wore off. And I realized once you get outside the central city, once you get east of 82nd, it's a completely different story. So there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. So there's a lot of great things going on in Portland, but there's a lot of opportunities for improvement. And it's really important because there's folks who don't walk because they want to walk. It's because they need to walk. And if getting to the bus stop, getting to school can't happen safely, it's not equitable. It's not, there's no justice in that. So,
and there's a lot of vocabulary that mm-hmm. comes along with this. And mm-hmm. so I want you to just take a moment, if you can, and say what transit dependent means, just so we can tie
Good
this
question.
All in.
Yeah, so transit dependent is somebody who either doesn't have access to a car or a driver's license for a plethora of reasons. I mean, they walk, take public transit, MAX, TriMet, or biking. So again, somebody who doesn't have access to a car. And again, it could be for a plethora of reasons why they choose not to or can't drive. So
beautiful. Thanks. Mm-hmm. Jess, why don't you go next?
So I am originally from Madison, Wisconsin, a city that is sometimes referred to as a smaller Portland. Mm-hmm. Very progressive in terms of how the city creates transit friendly infrastructure. And I've been here 21 years. My husband is a nurse at Emmanuel Hospital. I have a son who is a junior at Roosevelt High School. I worked for the first part of my career in education and coaching teachers. I left about 8 years ago and started working in nonprofit management and doing consulting for equity around equity and inclusion. And I was drawn to Oregon Walks because of their explicit commitment to equity, inclusion, and transportation justice. Mm-hmm. So for me, Oregon Walks is about creating a better community for all people. And when we look at I think there's so many opportunities for us as a community to create improvements in public health when we think about the impacts that walking can have on people's health. When we look at climate justice, we know that the decisions that we make around transportation are going to impact our climate. And then when we think about who has access to the table for making these important decisions about walking and making more pedestrian-friendly communities, Oregon Walks has really, really moved towards focusing our work on bringing those voices to the table. And I just couldn't be more excited or more happy to be on this team.
And it seems like in what you're describing where you live, mm-hmm. is that you're coming from sort of a neighborhood-based mm-hmm. walking structure.
Yes.
And so you're kind of bringing that personal experience and knowledge to the table as well.
Yes. Yep.
Lovely. Good. And then we have one more.
Hi. Again, I'm Ina, and I've been in Portland for 12 years. I moved here from Philadelphia, where I grew up. I was born and lived the first 8 years of my life in the former Soviet Union, the part that's now Ukraine. And I was really excited to come work for Oregon Walks because I actually, unlike most people, really self-identify as a pedestrian and always considered myself a pedestrian. That's really always been my primary mode of getting around. I've always lived or been lucky enough to live in pretty walkable, dense cities. Except for when I was in high school, I lived in the suburbs and I couldn't get anywhere at all without having my mom or someone drive me, which was really horrible and really felt like it curtailed my sense of independence and just self. I've really just known that the ability to get around by walking or rolling is pretty critical to just a sense of livability. Mm-hmm. And one of the main reasons I moved to Portland from Philadelphia is, you know, doing a bunch of research. I basically felt like I read this was like the most walkable city, the most walkable major city in our country. And you know, I think that we're still somewhere at the very top, but we still have a really long way to go to get to the point where, you know, walking is something that's available to anyone who wants to be able to do it.
And what I hear, and we'll be going to break in just a couple minutes, but I want to catch this point, is that in the inner part of Portland, there's a high walkability scale.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And then when we move past 82nd, is that correct?
Yeah.
Then suddenly the walkability scale goes down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'd just love to hear the difference between if you were going to give a walkability score mm-hmm. to the inner part of Portland and then a walkability score. Can we do that? Is there any, do you guys?
Yeah, I mean, this is all anecdotally and mm-hmm. from our experiences.
Exactly.
But I feel like inner Portland is probably like close to 8 out of 10. The things that could be improved are like driver attitudes and the way people interact with folks that are walking. Mm-hmm. I feel like east of 82nd and even slightly before that, I don't know, 4 or 5, the fact that there's still lacking sidewalks and roads aren't paved, there isn't enough lighting, cars are going at super high speeds on these wide arterials, you know, these wide 5-lane roads. I would say it's 4 out of 5. I don't know. And that's just
personally, I'm just wondering, you know, yeah. to give a relationship mm-hmm. base to this conversation. So, mm-hmm. you know, any thoughts that you have about those differences that you'd like to highlight?
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I think if you're, you know, getting around Portland, taking a look at the infrastructure, it's pretty clear, you know, the more dense a neighborhood is, the more safe for walking it becomes. And the further east you go, or, you know, either even like further north or like, you know, outer southeast, the density becomes much more sparse. Our streets become wider.
The distances between intersections, which, you know, every intersection is a legal crosswalk, and that's great. But if your nearest intersection is a mile away, that doesn't really help you. And that is pretty pretty frequently seen in those neighborhoods.
Anything else you want to add?
I think something to consider when thinking about how walkability operates in different parts of our city is to think about also the idea behind choice and gentrification. Mm-hmm. So in when we're talking about the inner, kind of close-in inner city of Portland, we're talking about communities that at this point have really high housing values and increasingly so have been displacing large numbers of community members east of 82nd. And so this walkability, this idea of walkability is something that is becoming more of an equity issue every day.
Beautiful. You're tuned to Recovery Zone on KBOO Portland. This month, we're talking with Oregon Walks. And when we come back, we'll talk more about transportation justice and Vision Zero, and the role that Oregon Walks plays in making Portland a safer, more enjoyable city for pedestrians. Welcome back. I am speaking with Oregon Walks, and we're going to talk about transportation justice next here.
Okay. I'm incredibly excited about this. Transportation justice is in my title as the transportation justice advocate. And for those who aren't...
Can you give your name one more time?
Yeah. Again, this is Izzy Armenta. For those folks who aren't familiar with the term transportation justice, it's kind of, in a nutshell, addressing the inequalities that exist in the ways we get around. And it's not just walking, but again, transportation, public transit, walking, biking, driving. There is inequalities, again, in the ways we get around. A lot of that is historical. So we say East Portland isn't walkable, and a lot of that is because it was annexed into the city later, and many of lower-income communities have been pushed out, and so there just hasn't been that needed investment in parts of Portland, again, East Portland, North Portland. And so transportation justice is addressing those inequalities because many folks don't get around by driving. They get around by taking public transit, by biking, by walking, because that is their only and primary way of getting around. And being able to do that, again, safely and easily is really important, because if it is a transportation justice is a justice issue, because if you can't live your day-to-day life safely, that is incredibly unbalanced. The fact that if you live in Central City and you can get around any way you want to safely and easily to the grocery store, visiting loved ones, going to places of worship, and you can't do that in East Portland because you put your life at risk crossing the street, getting around, it's an incredible imbalance that we're trying to work on. And again, it's a lot of its historical parts of Portland were annexed in later, taxes were more focused in Central City for investment and development purposes, and also just folks who don't have a voice live in East Portland, lower income folks, people of color, older adults. So a lot of the folks that have voices that are heard, people who have time, people with higher incomes live in Central City, and they, of course, it's more walkable and easier to get around. So,
and one of the words that you used again, which I'd love to clarify, mm-hmm. just so people can see what's underneath that, is needed investment.
Yeah.
It wasn't needed investment. Can you say a little bit more mm-hmm. about that?
Yeah. So, I guess what I was referring to as needed investment is just, I guess the density thing wasn't always an issue in East Portland. It was more rural and open space, so maybe sidewalks and getting around weren't needed at that time. But as it's more people are being moved to East Portland and there's population growth, that investment is needed now, that we do need sidewalks, we do need ways to get around safer and easier. And the city's aware of this, but it's our job to put a fire under them to make sure that this happens quickly, because the longer we wait, the longer the more people who put their lives at risk. So,
and there's three of you. correct, mm-hmm. in the main part of this organization.
Yes. Yes.
So that's a lot of energy mm-hmm. to both be aware of things and putting fire under people mm-hmm. to get things going, is my mm-hmm. sense.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, we have an incredible board, and we have grown out of a deep network of volunteers, really committed volunteers, mm-hmm. Who collaborate with us, and we're really excited about the future and about how we might continue to grow and walk with the communities who are most impacted by inequitable transportation investments and help elevate voices. And the good news is, and there's so much good news, some of the good news, and I've been happy about in my 11 days on the job, and going to some of these meetings at Metro and PBOT and ODOT, they're really shifting. Mm-hmm. So they've got leaders in place who are really wanting to look at the data and who care very deeply about folks who are living in East Portland and are interested in exploring ways that we can shift our time, energy, and focus into creating a safer place for people.
I'd say one of our strengths is, yes, you know, we're three people, and that's even that is very new. I was the second Oregon Walks staffer, and I've only been with the organization for over 3 years. But we have really, really strong and deep partnerships, like we alluded to before, with place-based community organizations. So what I mean by that is, you know, organizations like the Rosewood Initiative and Verde and Green Lens, these nonprofit organizations that are integral to their communities. They really focus very, very deeply on the neighborhood in which they're in, and it's a really, you know, all-encompassing kind of look at all of the needs of those communities. And then so we're able to partner with those folks and help help kind of bolster their efforts about around transportation justice. So, you know, even though there's only three of us and walkability is a problem all over the state, so it can be a very daunting endeavor. But we're very lucky to have these really great partnerships. And like Jess was also saying, to have really strong relationships with our elected officials and our, you know, Bureau and Metro staff that that are really, you know, prioritizing more and more the idea of equity and walkability.
And it seems like walkability has sort of come of age in our nation, too.
Definitely.
You know, it's finally time that cities of all levels are looking at how to make mm-hmm. their places more walkable. So I'm thinking this might could be a good time to talk about what you're doing in relation to Vision Zero
yeah.
and on a broader picture, because there's good news in here, right? And that there's three of you and you're working not just alone, but with this expanding radius of people invested in walkability.
Yeah. So to give a little brief background on Vision Zero, it is a global movement started, I think, in Sweden, and it is a plan that the city has adopted, I want to say, 2 to 3 years ago. And the Vision Zero's goal is to eliminate all traffic fatalities in the city of Portland by 2025. And that they're doing that in an approach, a multifaceted approach. A lot of crashes, not accidents, crashes occur on roads because they're designed in a way that's not forgiving, that accommodate high speeds, poor visibility. And so a lot of the ways that they're addressing Vision Zero is through infrastructure, but also education, and then connecting with communities, and very little enforcement. And that is strategic because, again, a lot of these communities that are at highest risk are also the ones that are the ones that have, you know, historically haven't been treated well by police departments and government agencies. So that's why there's very little enforcement at the time, because it wants to be done in a way to reach that goal, but that doesn't impact those people that are, again, most at risk.
Yeah. And that's pretty unique for Portland, or I mean, for Vision Zero policies. The Portland commitment to trying to reach that goal with minimal police enforcement. And that is, you know, one of the, we were one of, Oregon Walks was on the advisory committee to craft the Vision Zero policy at the city. And it was a really big deal for everyone there to really think about not just the safety implications of crashes, but also all of the like unintended consequences. You know, so often we can be fixing a problem and not thinking about other problems that we're creating. And we really wanted to be very intentional about limiting those unintentional consequences as much as possible. So really thinking about education and outreach and connecting with communities rather than enforcement. Because again, you know, these roads where it's very, very easy to speed because the way that they're designed, because the speeds are so, the speed limits are so high, they're mostly in low-income communities, communities of color, you know, neighborhoods that have already been so marginalized. We don't really want to be bringing in more negative impacts when we're trying to solve a problem.
Anything else about that, Jess?
It's just my heart's exploding with happiness because I just feel so lucky to be able to work with an nonprofit that is looking at an issue with a really deep equity lens and an understanding that that these issues are multifaceted and that we need to approach them from a place of curiosity and I'm just so grateful to be part of this team.
Yeah, and to add to that, I think that's kind of why we're working with a lot of partners in these communities because there's, you know, unintended consequences that we might not be aware of, and it's not just a one-size-fits-all solution for all communities, so we have to be aware of the existing conditions, feelings, and what's needed in those communities. And again, that's why we work with a lot of place-based partners because, again, we don't have the pulse in the community, but other folks do. So,
and I think to add on to what you said, Izzy, I think that what is so unique about Oregon Walks is that oftentimes when organizations have a constituency or a particular, you know, are looking at solving a particular problem or healing a particular hurt in a community, which so often nonprofits are doing, that we operate as experts and we operate as organizations that have the solution. And what I love about Oregon Walks is that we're really working to stay curious and to partner with the people most impacted. And to learn and to elevate voices. So it's great work.
I mean, being so small is sometimes a strength. I mean, we have to ask for help. Mm-hmm. There's only three of us. So we're definitely not afraid to turn to somebody else and, you know, ask for their expertise. Mm-hmm. And I think, Jess, you're right. I think so often, you know, nonprofit work is tough. It's, you know, a fear of lack of resources. So it's sometimes really scary to say, I don't know something. But I think that's one of Oregon Walk's strengths is that we're not afraid to speak up when we don't know something. And that gives us the openness to learn.
And it actually feels like it's part of your mission to speak up and say, I don't know. Yes. You know, like when you build your partnerships that it's, you're asking people and you're building leadership in communities rather than coming in and imposing a system on a community.
Absolutely. So. Yep. That's beautifully said, Carolyn. Thank you.
No, I just am really struck by the importance of that. Mm-hmm. I just got done with a trip traveling across America and people would Facebook me and say, well, what did you teach them? And I was like, nothing. I learned from them, you know? Right. And what I hear is that that's the point, is that you're going in as advocates, mm-hmm. the advantage of a three-person team, mm-hmm. right? And building the investment there. So we're going to do a break in another couple minutes and then have a chance to really look at how you build that leadership. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to just ask a couple more questions about the Vision Zero because it is, I thought it was national, but it's global.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how closely does Oregon Walks or do you work with the city with mm-hmm. that Vision Zero? Like how close is that partnership?
Yeah. we can totally speak more to that later.
No, we can do. We have a couple minutes right now because I'd love to.
Oh yeah.
After we do the break, I want to get in and like, how do you build that leadership and how do you get communities invested in their own on their own behalf? So
yeah. So our involvement with Vision Zero is we are on the task force team. It was a group of organizations that they wanted to involve as they developed the plan. So, and it's not just transportation groups. It's, you know, public health agencies, it's community organizations that are representative. And so we are on the task force and I believe it meets quarterly and we kind of inform and give, you know, advice on how to go about addressing the actions they want to do in Vision Zero through education, through better infrastructure. And so, yeah, we're involved through the Vision Zero task force and with a bunch of other partners that are also doing great work and that are really important in that work that's being done.
And we generally work very closely with our friends at PBOT. So it's the Portland Bureau of Transportation. And they are the bureau that oversees all of the major transportation questions and projects in our city, in Portland. And, you know, it's, I mean, it's a huge bureau. They have like 900 staff. So we don't personally know every single one of them. But we do work very closely with the Safe Routes to School team. They have an incredible, incredible team of folks that are just super dedicated to making sure kids are walking to school safely and have those resources. And we work with the planners and with the Active Transportation Division. And we're really lucky that the staff is very open to hearing from us and are very open to, you know, when we get in touch with them and say, you know, we're concerned about this project that you're proposing on so-and-so street. You know, we would like to discuss it with you. We've got some concerns. We're always welcome. We're always welcome to express those. And that's really lucky for us as an organization. And I think that that's really lucky for just your, you know, everyday person who's living in Portland and maybe doesn't have, you know, PBOT on speed dial. Because we hear from them what their concerns are and we're able to bring that to the people that act on those concerns.
Beautiful. Going to do a quick break here and move on. You're tuned to Recovery Zone on KBOO Portland. And this month, we're talking about the value and benefits of walking with Oregon Walks. If you'd like to call in with any questions or comments, the number here is 503-231-8187. So before we move on, I want to get back to your comment, Ina, about y'all are lucky that they listen to you. And I want to say just sitting in a room with you, of course they listen to you. You know what I mean? There's a way that you all walk advocacy, like it's really special in the world. And I just wanted to say that back to you, that there's, I can see how you develop great partnerships because of how that happens. So just want to say they're really lucky to have you all coming with the way that you articulate things and the clarity and the caring that you bring to the table is just really obvious. So
I just thank you so much. I want to thank you for that, Carolyn. And I think we really owe a great debt to Steph Routh and Noel Mickleberry, the first executive directors of the organization, who Jess is now taking over from, in the same vein of, you know, just approaching the work with curiosity and respect. And and this is something Jess and I have been talking about recently, just this like incredible lack of ego. So, you know, if they're listening, thanks guys.
We love you, Noel and Steph.
We'll have a little love fest for a moment, which is really important to do, you know, when you're trying to change a community, is that you need to bring in the love and the appreciation and build partnerships. So I'd love to hear about what are the common themes you're seeing in these neighborhoods? What do these neighborhoods do to be able to reclaim that power of having a walkable place? And then what does it mean? You know, what is walkable city area literally mean? Like, what do you guys want it to look like?
Yeah, I guess I could talk more about how neighborhoods are reclaiming their streets and making them more walkable. So one of our most recent examples is our partner at the Rosewood Initiative. We are working with them for a couple of years with a joint grant that we have and providing opportunities for community members to develop those skills to become their own advocates and opportunities. So just this year, one example is we did a testimony training with Spanish-speaking women's groups that is at the Rosewood Initiative, providing that opportunity to learn how to write testimony and give testimony in a way that's really effective, say at a city council meeting or a metro council meeting, and then also doing some sort of forms of community mapping, so going out, mapping the conditions that currently exist so community members can actually have a understanding. They do live there and they know the conditions, but sometimes actually mapping it and seeing it.
Do you map with them or do you map and then bring the map to them or both?
We map with them. So our last mapping activity is we have a lot of volunteers on Oregon Walk's team that are transportation professionals. And so we brought some of them out to work with community members to understand how you actually map the conditions. So you have,
that's cool.
And so they learn from each other and then using that information to realize where we need to focus our work and efforts, but also just for both of us to get a better understanding of what those current conditions look like. And then, yeah, just providing different opportunities for them to develop those skills to feel comfortable. And then also providing opportunities for them to actually have time to go to these meetings and bringing the meetings to them rather than mm-hmm. them to the meetings, because a lot of folks don't have time in the evening because childcare isn't provided. They have, you know, non-typical 9-to-5 jobs. So bringing the meetings to them and the partners, the city agencies to where they are. So
could you give me an example of what some of the meetings that would come to them are?
Yeah. So one of the improvements that is going on is 162nd. That is still very early in the development process, but rather having, you know, just say a very technical transportation meeting at City Hall. They were planning on doing, say, an open house at the Rosewood Initiative, which is based off 162nd, but making sure that they're accommodating to folks. So making sure childcare is provided, mm-hmm. that there's food because it is during dinner time. So making sure that folks only, if there's a need for them to, that needs to be addressed for them to show up to the meeting, that it is provided. So like, well, as an example, one of the meetings that bringing to them, so.
Making sure that there's, you know, interpretation in various languages that are spoken in the communities.
Thank you.
There's, you know, so many various languages spoken at
home. Is that through volunteers or do you pay people to come in or how does that happen?
We work with ERCO a lot. Mm-hmm. They have really great interpretation services and sometimes we're really lucky when there's like staff members or, community members that can translate. Usually Spanish. Other languages are harder to come by.
And speaking of language, I've been doing this all day. It's kind of using a lot of technical language, which gets lost on people. So making sure like at different opportunities, we're engaging with community members at those, you know, informational meetings that it's information is being provided in a digestible form that people understand, that people that, who aren't transportation professionals know what they're talking about. So making sure that that information is more accessible and understandable for folks. So,
I mean, sometimes I forget all the acronyms that
I know. What is ERCO? ERCO?
ERCO.
ERCO.
Immigrant Refugee. I forgot the other two.
It's the Immigrant Refugee Community of Oregon? Organization?
Okay. Yeah. We'll catch it later.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they do really great work with our immigrant and refugee communities. And there's, you know, so many folks moving into Portland from various different countries and regions of the world. And they do a really great job of making sure that those folks have the resources and the community that they need.
One thing I think that is so interesting about this work is how we've been able to look at data and look at who's most impacted mm-hmm. By crashes in high crash corridor neighborhoods. And something that was surprising to me is that we know that people who are over the age of 65 are more at risk. We know immigrant communities are more at risk.
Yes.
We know that low-income folks are more at risk for being killed in or injured in crashes involving cars when they're walking. And so really focusing on our partnerships with AARP, the Rosewood Initiative, APANO, to work to listen and then connect those voices with the planners and policymakers in the city. And a lot of them are connected with Oregon Walks.
And it seems like, you know, populations that are underserved also feel the least at ease speaking up sometimes. Mm-hmm. And just that seems like a big part of it. Like there's the literal part, like how do you plan? How do you make the streets accessible? How do you do all those things? But then there's that soft skill base about helping people really believe that they can have an impact in their community or in their neighborhood. And so just wanted to see if you wanted to speak about that at all, because that seems like a vital part of what you do.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, it's a lot of, you know, providing opportunities to develop those skills, but then also it's a lot of who do you talk to? Where do you go to, like, express this concern? So making sure, like, as we work with folks that they know where to go, which agency, who at that agency should talk to, but then also developing, they already have those skills. They just need some support to fine-tune those skills that they have, because their personal stories, and just helping them share that.
One thing that I think about in terms of Oregon Walk is, in terms of Oregon Walks, is leveraging our privilege as an organization to be able to walk with folks who have not been historically heard and whose stories have not been historically valued by decision makers. I believe, you know, that we are in Portland beginning to wake up as individuals and as governments, government entities, to the historical trauma that's been done and how we can begin to start to heal some of that. And so a big part of what I see Oregon Walks doing is being able to leverage the privilege that it means to be in an organization and to have a seat at the table and invite folks to come in and sit with us and speak their truth, and to sit with them and say, you know, listen, this isn't, you know, these perspectives are important.
Yeah. And are there any common themes that you see emerging when you're working with these different neighborhoods?
Yeah, I mean, one of the most common themes is obviously infrastructure. Many folks are, you know, just afraid of crossing the street because there isn't enough crosswalks, marked crosswalks. Again, it is the law. Every intersection is a crosswalk, but most people don't feel comfortable crossing at an unmarked intersection on a five-lane road with traffic going at 40 miles an hour. So main concern is infrastructure, but then also feeling like the streets and the city bureaus aren't for them. You know, and then that it's, you know, the only time they come to them is when they need something, or it's farther along the process and they don't have an opportunity to actually have any input. So that's kind of some of the recurring themes. We want to make sure we break those negative things that are causing those themes down. And so, yeah, a lot of it's infrastructure, and I don't know, anything else?
I mean, I think it's really about values. It's about, like, what are our values as a city? What are our values as people who live here? And so many of these roads basically are telling the story that vehicular travel from point A to point B is our main value. That's our main priority. And that's why folks that live along, you know, 162nd or Columbia or Division, you know, feel like their existence on those roads aren't being valued, because it's not for them. It's not for safely crossing. It's not for safely going to your, you know, local store or catching the bus or getting your kids to school. It's about folks that don't even live in that neighborhood using it as a pathway from, you know, downtown to wherever it is that they're going. So of course folks don't feel like the roads are for them, the city's not for them, all of these public hearings and meetings aren't for them. So being able to really break down those barriers and reminding, A, the decision makers that these are the people that we're responsible to, that they're, you know, our residents, they're our taxpayers, just like everyone else. So their needs have to be addressed. And then, I don't know. I guess my hope is showing those folks that are maybe intimidated by talking to their elected officials or going into City Hall or however, that it's not that scary. You know, they're just people too. And they make mistakes. And, you know, if we can just kind of talk to each other as people, then some of those barriers can hopefully be broken down a little bit.
And if you're going to say your biggest successes so far in the last few years, what would they be?
Ooh. I want to talk about walkways.
Yeah.
I think that's a great success.
Yeah.
So
and I'm going to have to interrupt you in a minute, but we'll get started. Okay.
Okay.
So just don't feel like I'm interrupting you.
Okay. Well, walkways is, open streets. So what, again, vocabulary, what does that mean? Open streets. That means we're actually closing the streets to cars and we're opening them to people. So, you know, folks in Portland might be familiar with Sunday Parkways. It's a event over the summer that our city puts on, and basically you can bike and walk in roads that are normally for cars to all these different parks. And we've adapted it for pedestrian purposes. So first we've, you know, shortened the routes so that they're more walkable. But also I'm really proud of the neighborhoods that we pick to, and you know, sometimes they pick us. We don't really
Let's
go.
Let's do the break and then we'll hear the neighborhoods. Okay. You've tuned to the Recovery Zone on KBOO Portland, and this month we're talking with Oregon Walks. If you'd like to call in to ask any questions, you can call in at 503-231-8187. Okay, so we're going to hear about walkways. And is that tied directly to the Sunday Parkways, or is that something different?
It's different. It was inspired by it. I think it sort of started as like a spinoff. But I think, you know, this is the third year we've done it, and it's really coming into its own, and we're really honing into like what it is and who it's for. And who it's for is these communities that we've been talking about for the last hour, however long we've been here, that need more attention paid to their needs and to their just existing along these high crash corridors. And what it is a celebration of all of the community assets, community assets, things that are great that already exist in a community.
Can you give me an example of, like, you were about to name some of the areas and then what some of their assets are?
So the last walkways that we did was in the Rosewood neighborhood. So that Stark and 162nd is like the heart of that neighborhood. And the Rosewood Initiative has their offices and a community center right there at that intersection. And that is an amazing community asset. They have all kinds of classes. And they're doing an event, I think, this week, helping folks enroll in preschool. They're always, you know, language specific. They're always responding to the needs of the community. And that's an amazing asset that, you know, everyone in Portland should know about. And it's an amazing community that's got a lot of really great things going for it that everybody should know about. But it's also at the intersection of 2 5-lane roads.
Wow.
So it's really dangerous. There's 2 elementary schools that sit right on those 2 main roads. There's a shocking lack of sidewalks, even on those 2 main roads. It's just incredible how much it feels the minute you're out there that it's not for you to walk on. And, you know, when we do a walkways event there, when we shift the focus away from people traveling at 30 miles an hour or higher to get to wherever it is they're going, and we shine it on the people that live in that community, that live and work and worship and play there, then it's this like wonderful way to bring attention to all of the, you know, great things that are happening, but also the really, really critical, dire needs that they need addressed right now, because people are unfortunately losing their lives on those streets.
And so the walkways event, can you just break it down and let me know, like, what does it look like?
Yeah. So it's, you know, we worked with the Rosewood Initiative, and it was identifying where along the community we should have the route, you know, what that route looks like. Mm-hmm. And we identified it should go from the Rosewood Initiative Community Center down to Park Lane Park. Mm-hmm. And that was about a half mile route. And we closed off a couple lanes on 162nd. It was a 5-lane road. We closed down 2 lanes, and we filled that space with different community partners to table at different activities.
Like vendors and events.
Mm-hmm. Vendors. Yeah. One of the local churches was passing out snow cones. We had live music from East Portland Youth. We had a parade, our first actual parade. On at walkways, ARP was also a part of it, part of their neighbor walks. So it's kind of an open streets event, community gathering. It's kind of just, hey, we can close down some of the street. The neighborhood's still going to function normally. It gets opportunity for people to come out. There isn't a lot of events that are out in East County for folks, you know, to come out.
Oh my God, do you remember the one school that we were at when I think it was like someone behind the, anyway, one of the people that worked at the school were like, what? You're inviting us to be in a parade? No one ever invites us to be in a parade. And that just broke my heart. Like, why don't they get to be in a parade?
So walkways is kind of, to bring the excitement and something good to the neighborhood and kind of plant that seed in folks' head that like, oh yeah, we're having fun here, but also you notice how we closed down some of the lanes and we kind of talked about getting around is kind of difficult, so we want to make sure we're having fun. And
but there's a payoff.
Yeah.
You know, there's a practice and a payoff.
Yeah.
Partying with a purpose.
Yeah. Partying with a purpose.
Yeah,
that's a good
I like
one.
That is a good one.
Yeah.
Because it is kind of like a really big block party, you know, when it at its heart.
Yeah.
And how many people tend to I wish I was there. I'm like, what is the next
you
one?
Should come
next year.
It'll be in June.
Yeah.
I know our biggest was, I think, in Lentz, because we did in the Lentz neighborhood. I think that was what, 2,500, 3,000?
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. It was really big. We had a really big route too.
Yeah.
This year was a little smaller. But you know, it had just as much heart.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So close to about 1,000 folks. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's a turnout.
Yeah.
You know, that's bigger than some towns, you know, and coming to a neighborhood that you've closed off streets, I just want to say bravo. So
thank you. It's a lot of fun.
Again, partying with a purpose.
I know.
I like that.
I'm sure I didn't invent it. I can't take credit for it.
But it's a good phrase.
Yeah.
So in our last few minutes, let's talk about like how you want to get people more involved in community, in Oregon Walks. And I just have to ask one question. It seems like there you have this wave of volunteers behind you. Like that, it just seems pretty big, which is great. And
it would have to be. There's only 3 staff.
And
it was started by volunteers. That's really important to remember, you know, for the first over a decade of our existence. It was all volunteer run. Like, that's incredible, right?
That's commitment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, I interrupted. What was your question, Carol?
No, I first have to just say it's so cool because there's 3 of you at the table with me, but I feel like there's thousands of you behind me.
I love that.
Yes. Wonderful.
Really. The ideal organization, you know, is that you are not imposing, that you're sharing and
I'm blushing.
I'm just sitting here just in awe and in honor. So I want to make sure that we take some time and talk about like how people can get involved. What's what do you see in the next year and that you'd like to even expand that wave behind you? And if there's anything we miss that you really want to make sure we talk about.
That's a really great question. When we're looking at Oregon Walks, the next 5 years are going to be another exciting transition for us as we dig deeper into exploring what our strategic plan is going to look like. So we'll need help with folks who want to get involved on committees at the board level. We're recruiting board members right now. We are looking for folks to engage with us in volunteer opportunities with walkways. We're looking for folks to partner with us at our smaller events that are connected with ARP and Rosewood Initiative. I'm working at the grassroots level with Izzy, and in the community. So there's so many. We have opportunities for filing and showing up to get
exciting.
testifying, on the behalf of walkers at different committee meetings at the local and regional level. So there's so many opportunities moving forward. And I would not be a good executive director day 12, if I did not encourage folks to support our mission. We have a year-end giving campaign going on right now, and they can go to our website and donate to help us continue this work of...
And what is your website?
www.organwalks.org.
Okay.
Yeah. Work with us, partner with us to think more deeply about what a walkable community looks like and how we can create more walkable communities for everyone in Oregon.
Great.
And Clinton Street Theater is doing a benefit for us next Monday, December 10th at 6:30 p.m. If you come out, you can hang out with me, that's Ina, and watch Les Miserables. Not the most cheerful of movies, but it is one of my favorites. And
The movie?
Clinton Street Theater did.
Okay.
Yeah, I think if we'd chosen it, would have been probably like Forrest Gump or, some kind of walking movie. But all the proceeds go towards Oregon Walks and our mission of creating livable, walkable communities. And tickets are only $5. And you'll get to hear more from me about why Oregon Walks is so great.
So you're going to be speaking a little bit before
the
movie.
Will. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah, so movie, popcorn, and helping a good cause. So again, partying with a purpose.
That's what we're all about.
Yeah. And anything you'd like to do a shout out for, what kind of things that you want to see people come out
with? For folks who are living in these communities that are not safe, if you're not understanding how to get started, where to even look, how to connect with folks to make your seats safer, please, reach out to us. We want to be able to provide those opportunities to make more of those advocates in the communities, and also for folks on the other end of the spectrum who know what's going on, transportation professionals who do this in their day-to-day life. If you want to know how to help communities and elevate their voices, connect with us as well, too, because there's opportunities for both folks who aren't familiar with what's going on and those who do it in their day-to-day work to bring them together and work together. So if anybody who's interested, feel free to connect with us, and we will find opportunities for folks to get involved.
Anything else we want to cover? We have a couple more minutes, and what strikes me is going back to the beginning, transit dependent, livability, like how do you create a city that allows for that? And as Ina was saying, we have this huge influx of people coming into Portland that are put to the edges, right?
That's true.
And how to help there be more inclusion in that process. Just, if there's anything else you want to add?
I think the city is doing a great job of having all these plans. We have the
20-minute neighborhoods.
What? Oh, no, the 20-minute neighborhoods were great. That was an awesome idea. I wish people were still talking about it. The idea was that, every neighborhood should be the kind where in 20 minutes you can walk to all of the things that you need. Transit, store, groceries, post office, I don't know what other things. But I don't really hear so much talk about that anymore. And I think that that's important. I think it's important to be intentional about what we're like putting in our neighborhoods. It's just important to not only have, the ability to walk safely somewhere, but it's also important to have things to walk to. And if you're pushed to the outer edges where you feel like you can't, go get your groceries unless you take like a hour and a half bus ride, like that's not super livable.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
And I want to finish by saying, I love that final comment is like, how do we be intentional about how we're making communities livable, walkable for people who are and aren't transit dependent, right?
Yep.
To minimize I think, both fatalities and accidents, but also make it more communal.
Yeah.
To build these cities. So I just want to say this has been an absolute honor to sit with you. And
it's been great being here. Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. You've been listening to KBOO Portland with Oregon Walks. And its brand new executive director, who is on day 12, Jess Johnson. And I just want to thank you all for being here and having Stephanie, who's actually typically the host on this show, trust me to take the mic as she recovers from being sick. She'll be back next month. And this is Recovery Zone, and it's focused on healing our world. And I just welcome us all to join in and do so. Have a good day. KBOO Portland.
Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Northwest Quartet Fest on Saturday, December 1st from 1 to 10 p.m. at Kennedy Violins in Vancouver. The Northwest Quartet Fest is a celebration of local small group ensembles benefiting local school music programs in need. There will be over 15 ensembles performing a variety of genres, including classical, traditional Irish, jazz, bluegrass, rock, and more. Again, that's the Northwest Quartet Fest on Saturday, December 1st, from 1 to 10 p.m. at Kennedy Violins, 508 Southeast 117th Avenue in Vancouver. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Portland, this is Tevin.
And this is Jalen.
Next week on Combined Culture Radio, tune in for an exclusive listening experience.
We are Portland's native Kobe premiering his new album, Escalate, with me.
That's an exclusive opportunity to lean in on Kobe on CC Radio at 7 p.m. on Wednesday, November 28th, only on KBOO.
I'm on the right away. Don't have to find a way. Get out my way. On the better days, yeah. Don't care what you say.